Set your course for the Hoth system. General Veers, prepare your men.
All troops will debark for ground assault. Prepare to target the main jet.
Echo Station 3TA. On an Imperial Walker.
Attack pattern Delta. Go now. Watch that crossfire, boys. Right now, I feel like I take on the whole Empire myself.
Target, maximum firepower.
Imperial troops have entered the bay.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Echo Base. This is number 167, recorded on January 13th, 2019. I am here with my trusty co-host, Tim. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, Lou. How about you?
I am doing well myself. We are back on track. We're still in this year of Star Wars 2019, which is awesome. And yeah, we got a little bit of news to talk about this week and a little bit of a discussion leading into what's going to become hopefully our favorite television series coming up soon, The Mandalorian.
Yeah, I've got some very high hopes for it. I think a lot of other people do. So I'm pretty excited about it.
I am very excited about it. So, well, let's get right into it here. So episode 9, we're in the same year as the release of the movie now. So it feels real to me, doesn't it? It's we're here.
Yeah.
That begs the question, when are we going to get a trailer?
You know, I don't know. There were a lot of rumors around like Christmas and New Year's that they were going to drop something. And of course, those rumors didn't even pan out to be anything tangible. Mm-hmm. So, you know, folks are kind of looking at dates of things. And, you know, we've seen patterns of both Disney kind of on its own with other things like the MCU, as well as with Lucasfilm dropping things associated with certain events. So we have a number of those events coming up over the next few months. So maybe that's going to trigger it, but maybe not. They also sometimes randomly, hey, let's pick this random Wednesday and put it on
right.
Good Morning America.
Good Morning America, right? And, you know, Disney's one of these things. They're kind of like Apple in the fact of, we don't have to follow anybody else's rules as to when we're going to drop this trailer. We're just going to drop it when we want to drop it.
True. And they really don't have to follow any rules. I mean, hey, it's their stuff. If they want to drop a trailer 1 month before the movie, then they can do that. And I think, quite honestly, we've been spoiled over the last few years with trailers with a lot of these big blockbuster movies coming out like months and months ahead of time.
Mm. I mean, one school of thought would say that the longer they have between the release of the trailer and the release of the movie, the more spent, the more pent up anticipation and the more negative comments coming out when a movie does release, because people are just so anxious for it.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, almost like maybe you want to give them less time to think about how they're going to cut you apart and just release it. And then the movie comes out next month and you have it. But we have a couple.
They do like to get the hype train going.
Yeah.
Which I think is fine. I mean, hey, it's marketing. It's great. It but helps the hype build train, anticipation.
Yeah, you but know. The hype train hasn't really worked out for Star Wars all that well lately.
Yeah, I mean, there have certainly been some issues with it. I mean, especially since a lot of the sequel trilogy hasn't been received as well as other films have been. And of course, we say that, and they have both broken records.
Right.
They've both broken box office records. So clearly, they're still doing something right. But, you know, we do have kind of an angry corner of the Star Wars fandom that doesn't like them.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Solo had its issues.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Rogue One was a damn near perfect film. So I...
right, yeah. I agree with you on both parts. I mean, you know, I don't think this, you know, and as the movies have aged with me, I kind of... Maybe I become more forgiving, but I'm happy with almost everything we've had in film release now.
Yeah. I'm not unhappy with any of it.
Right. I mean, there may be some things that would have changed. You know, George didn't call me though, so we couldn't get that, you know, on film. But yeah, we have a couple of different things coming up this year, especially, or at least the next couple of months, that are probably prime candidates for marketing for this movie coming out.
Yeah.
We see, well, I mean, the first thing coming up is Super Bowl, which hopefully the Patriots will be playing in again. They're on their way. One more roadblock to get there, but they're working on it. You know, and that is a pretty big spotlight for movies in general. There's always movie trailers released during Super Bowl, and it does give you a big audience. I mean, that's one of the biggest audiences in the world as far as a 30-second TV spot goes.
Totally.
You think we'll see a teaser there?
We could. I mean, the timing of it is right. I think, especially if we kind of look at where we might anticipate seeing our first full trailer. But with the Christmas and New Year's period of time, with those rumors being debunked, I think the early to mid-February timeframe for the Super Bowl will work. They've definitely dropped trailers before, folks will probably remember, and I know a lot of people complained about them dropping on like Monday Night Football and that kind of stuff. Which was, of course, just so interesting that people would complain that, oh, well, I don't watch football. Now you're compelling me to do so. No, actually, no one was making you watch football, considering right. that a minute after it dropped, it was going to end up on YouTube anyway. So
exactly.
You didn't have to watch it live on TV. So, you know, stop your complaining over that. But anyway, you know, and the same thing may happen for the Super Bowl. And of course, if they're going to, whenever they've done these, they do tell people that, yes, we are going to do this.
Right.
Because again, they want to build hype. So they're telling people when this teaser is going to come out. And, you know, is that going to make more people watch the Super Bowl? Mm-hmm. Sure, probably some. I mean, there's a lot of folks who have always said, you know, for many years, hey, I watch the Super Bowl for the commercials. I'm not a football fan. Okay,
right.
Hey, that's fine.
Right.
I mean, I got to say, hey, depending on the teams that are playing, you know, I could even go half and half where it's good football, but also the commercials are usually really fantastic. So I get great enjoyment out of them, too.
It's tough because you have no place to, you know, get up and get snacks. It's like, commercials exactly. on, everybody quiet, we gotta listen to, you know, so. But yeah, so I think that's a prime spot for a teaser. And I'm sad it's only going to be a teaser, but
yeah,
you know, we got to get that first. Then the big question is, when do we get that full trailer? And how far out is it from the movie? A lot of speculation is going around about Star Wars Celebration in Chicago in April that we'll get this. And that's a perfect spot to put it, I would think. I mean,
absolutely perfect time for it. And that is something, you know, clearly we're going to get something for episode 9 at Celebration.
Right.
I mean, the timing of it is just absolutely perfect. And they would not be, I cannot see Disney and Lucasfilm waiting for San Diego Comic-Con or something like that. This is Star Wars Celebration. This is what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
You need to feed the beast.
And I think, you know, if you don't,
gotta give something to folks.
Yeah, and if you don't do it there, people are going to be kind of pissed off that, look, this is the big Star Wars party.
Yeah.
And you don't give us a trailer? I mean, I think we're all expecting, you know, speaking of, let's kind of delve into that a little bit here. I think we're all expecting to see a trailer for the movie. Mm-hmm. We're expecting to see something about The Mandalorian, whether it's footage, whether it's a trailer, whether it's just a panel of the actors and Jon Favreau and everybody else. We're expecting that to be a big thing, yep. right? I mean, we're going to get stuff for Resistance, I'm assuming, more Resistance stuff going out there. So, I mean, and then, you know, we're farther out in production, but the Cassian Andor series, I don't know if we're going to get any visuals from that, but hopefully we'll have some at least news about that.
Well, and if anything, I'd love to see Diego Luna there talking about it.
Yeah.
I mean, he is the star. He is returning to reprise that role, and he's definitely a fan favorite. Ever since Rogue One, people loved him. He seems to be very personable. He likes the fans. He likes doing this kind of stuff. And I think it would be great just to, you know, have him and you know, have a director or producer mm-hmm. or someone up there just to kind of, you know, fill a little bit more of the stage and talk to some folks about this. And I mean, just roughly frame it. They don't have to give anything away, but just kind of frame it for us a little bit more. Talk obviously about what's we know going it takes on. Place before Rogue One because, you know, spoiler, he's dead after Rogue yep. One. But, you know, give us some idea of maybe where it takes place or where some of the stories take place and some of the things that are going on. And I'd love to see it. I mean, there's very clearly a lot of depth to the character. Mm-hmm. I would absolutely love to see K2.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
In this show. And I don't know if they're going to get, what's his name?
Alan Tudyk.
Yeah. Certainly don't know if they're going to get Alan Tudyk for it. I think it'd be great to see kind of like this,
having them develop their relationship. I mean,
yeah, I mean, kind of a buddy cop thing, but it's more of a spy type of thing. But obviously K2 gives some levity.
Yeah.
To things. And so I think that would be great because I don't know that anyone, I wouldn't say anyone. I don't know that a lot of people want to see something that is constantly dark. And even when you do like something that is regularly dark, you do like it to be broken up with some moments of levity. So
oh, sure.
That would be cool too.
And it would be a good chance to do something where we have the beginning of their relationship where, you know, hey, he wasn't always the way he is. He has mm-hmm. evolved over time as his programming has changed or been broken down more or whatever they want to write that script as. But
yeah,
I'm sure K2 will change and evolve over time.
Absolutely.
So, there is tons of stuff we could get out of that Cassian Andor series, even if it's just a panel of production folks talking about the production so far, where we're at, what we're doing, you know, how, I mean, there sure. was the panel at Celebration Anaheim, well before it was kind of changed at the last minute too, because of, director changes, but they basically went into the behind the scenes stuff of, Rogue One, not really behind the scenes stuff, but the, you know, how I got the job, how, you know, what was going on, what the development process has been like so far.
Yeah.
And there was nothing shot yet. It was just, this was all behind the scenes stuff, which it was fascinating.
Oh, absolutely.
One of the best panels I went to it at Anaheim. So
yeah. I love that stuff. And, you know, even if they do want to talk about like some sets and maybe even show some establishing shots of things that really aren't giving much of anything away, but it shows something. It's still something that's very interesting. And you get some of the creatives involved in it talking about these things and what the inspirations are and how they did this and why they did that. And, you know, just those little threads. I mean, fans love that stuff and we're going to take it and run with it. You know, we're going to come back to our show and we're going to talk about each one of those panels for like an entire episode. So, you know, we love that stuff.
Definitely. Well, speaking of Celebration Chicago, we did have some more news as far as who's going to be there. We had some voice actors that have announced that they're going to be at Celebration Chicago. We have a bunch of people from the Resistance.
Yep.
So we have, Christopher Sean and Susie McGrath. Those are the two kind of leads in Resistance, Kazuda and Tam.
Mm-hmm.
Also from Resistance, we have Scott Lawrence is going to be there, right? And
yeah, he plays Yeager.
James Arnold Taylor. Yep.
Yeah, so James Arnold Taylor, who obviously is known for
done a lot of stuff
and has done it like on everything. So
yeah, yeah. Let's see, what else do we have here? I'm going to start mispronouncing names now. So we have Janina Gavankar.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
She voiced Eden Versio in Battlefront 2, the game.
That's been cool. And of course, Matthew Wood, who's done a ton of stuff, General Grievous and among other things. And he works as a sound engineer, too, on the movies, doesn't he?
I believe so. I think he's done a bunch of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I think that's about it for announcements for new people, right, that we haven't had before out here.
Yeah, I think so. And so they've announced that these folks are going to be there for autographs and right up on StarWars.com, you know, they have a portion set up for Celebration. They're directing folks to StarWarsAuthentics.com, which is where they can sign up for emails for the autograph sessions for information on that. But also you should actually go to StarWarsCelebration.com and you can sign up for their announcements there. And get these emails, which are going to start coming out with much more frequency over the next couple of months, I'm sure, to give us more information.
It always amazes me of how long they wait to announce some of this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know if the, like they're purposefully trying to space it out, so they're kind of still constantly building some anticipation, or if it is taking a while for them to set schedules and sign contracts and that kind of stuff. But yeah, it is great that these folks are going to be there. I would certainly expect that the voice actors from the Resistance will probably do a panel.
I imagine so, yeah.
I mean, when you have them there, that all just kind of makes sense. And by then, the first season of Star Wars Resistance will be done, and they'll be probably in production for season two, which was just announced a few days ago. Mm-hmm. And then you have someone like James Arnold Taylor there, who always very typically does his own thing. You know, he'll kind of have his own show, you know, on a stage, basically set up as a panel. And just because of the huge variety of things that he's been in, he may end up being on two or three panels talking about any one of the projects that he's been on. So he seems very personable. And have you had a chance to catch any of his YouTube stuff that he's done?
I have not. No, I've seen him at celebrations, but I have not seen his YouTube stuff.
Yeah, he has kind of a YouTube series that he's put out about voice acting, and he'll bring in guests, other voice actors and folks in the business, producers and such that he has worked with. And it's really interesting. It's almost kind of talk showy, where basically he's hosting it and he's talking to them about things. And it's a lot of fun. I don't catch every episode of it, but I've caught a few here and there. It's probably been a couple months easily since I've seen one. Mm-hmm. But you know, James Arnold Taylor is just a huge presence in the voice industry. So he's pretty awesome.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing him speak. So let's see. As you just mentioned, Star Wars Resistance was picked up for season two. So we're going to get more of that. And I don't know about you, but the first half of the season is over. The second half actually starts tonight that we're recording this on the 13th. Mm-hmm. I was a little bit underwhelmed by the first half of the season.
Ditto.
It seemed slow. It seemed like that, you know, I wanted more resistance if you want to go there with that, but it just seemed like they were setting up too much of this as the stuff happening on that station. And it didn't seem like it had anything to do with the overall greater war effort or resistance or anything else.
Yeah. And a lot of, there's a lot of commentary out there that kind of echoes our thoughts with it, that this first half of the season has really been a slow burn. Now, have you seen the trailer that they just put out for the second half of the season?
The trailer looks like it's going to be more along the lines of what I was hoping to get out of this series.
Yeah, it absolutely does.
Because the first half ended with basically the First Order coming into the station to help provide security, right? Yes. That's where that ended. And it was like, okay, so now maybe things will start to pick up. I mean, we had this kind of bumbling character who is now a spy, even though he had no training. And I'm like, okay, how's this going to work? But I know it's a kid series. I know it's even set younger than we've had in the past, but it feels like they're getting more into the meat of what the Resistance is and what the First Order is doing in the station and how they're going to be playing off each other. And, you know, there's a lot of moments in that trailer talking about how, you know, the First Order is not taking care of air operations and security. Yeah. And, you know, the aces, the racers are now grounded. And I mean, there's a lot of good stuff going on that's going to make this harder for our heroes to kind of overcome.
Yeah, it certainly seems to me, in seeing this trailer for the second half of the season, that really the first half of the season was totally to establish the premise of the show, build the characters, you know, kind of get a little bit of character development, flesh them out a little bit, and then in the second half just really light things up, which it absolutely seems to do. I'm much more excited about this show after having seen this trailer for the second half of the season.
Yeah, I'll agree with that 100%. Because I was getting to the point where I was like, I'm glad they're only half hour episodes, because I'm really not looking forward to spending all my time watching this. And it really wasn't getting anywhere. But yeah, I think it's going to be a lot better in this second half. And yeah, I understand they had to develop the characters. And I always give season, you know, new shows, at least a complete season, for the most part, before I ditch them, because they got to find their feet. They got to find their voices. They have to understand how they're being written, and the writers will understand how they're being acted. So it all kind of plays into each other.
Totally. And yeah, so the things that we see in this trailer, very, very actiony.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see where the story really starts to unfold. And this brings us not only up to The Force Awakens, but within The Force Awakens. Mm-hmm. I mean, they show an animated version of Hux's speech.
Yeah, yeah.
Before they fire, what's the name of
Starkiller Base?
Starkiller Base. Thank you. So, like, they show that in this trailer. Mm-hmm. So that's really exciting that this actually goes into The Force Awakens. And there's some different commentary that I've been reading out there that expects, particularly since The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi were, you know, moments away from each other, since basically they're back-to-back episodes, if you will, that season two of Star Wars Resistance is going to flow directly into that time period for The Last Jedi.
Interesting. It'd be interesting to see if they run with that and fill in that gap between where episodes 8 and 9 are, you know, waiting. Because you figure if they're already into The Force Awakens now, that all happens in the same time frame. How many more seasons of Resistance can we have before you get outpaced from where we're at? So
yeah. Yeah, very true. And if it is true that there's going to be an approximate 1 year gap. Did we mention that in the last episode?
I think we did. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, there is this rumor that there's an approximate 1 year gap between episodes 8 and 9. So maybe that's a little bit of space where Star Wars Resistance is going to end up playing. Maybe when they get to like season 3 or something, there's always, I think, solid stories to tell, because while the movies may focus on particular characters and such, there's the rest of the galaxy. There's stuff that's going on out there. Sometimes it gets mentioned, sometimes it doesn't. You know, hey, what about that firefight that Maz Kanato was in during The Last Jedi that, you know, she did happen to take the time, which is very nice of her, in the middle of that firefight to have a conversation with, Finn. Which I thought was just really awesome of her.
Very gracious. Yep.
But like, what was that? What was all that about? It would be great to get more of a story on that. Maybe we'll see that happen in Resistance. Maybe we'll see it in a book. Maybe we'll see it in a comic. Who knows? But the great thing is that there's all these different mediums that they can show that stuff in, which is really cool.
Sure. Sure. Okay, moving along here. So in other news, stuff that doesn't touch, you know, the shows we have or the con coming up, in general. So Fortnite is a little game you may have heard of that a few people are playing around the world, I guess. I'm not really into it, so I don't really know. But, you know, Tim, you play Fortnite, right?
Yeah. It's been probably a couple weeks since I've played, but I play fairly regularly. If you listen to the Random Chatter show, every once in a while I'll mention Fortnite. And Fortnite is really this, you know, video game phenomena.
Yeah.
And just, you know, gazillions of people are on it. I get my ass kicked by, you know, some 12-year-old kid all the time, I'm sure. And they do have within Fortnite what's called a creative mode. And think...
Like the creative mode in Minecraft?
So Minecraft,
so you're not playing competitively. You can just build stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I was basically going to equate it to was Minecraft. And so there's someone in there called Maka Makes. That's their character's name. And they have a YouTube channel. And the big thing, which I don't understand, but it's been going on for a few years, is video gamers putting their stuff up on YouTube and people watching them play the games and do things. It's not for me personally. I know a lot of people obviously do watch these things, which is what makes a lot of these YouTubers very, very popular. you know, I can see it from the perspective of, hey, I want to learn some moves or some strategy in playing this. Or if there's something that is creative, you do get to kind of see some gee whiz stuff. But a lot of these YouTubers have regular followings of, you know, thousands and thousands of people who, you know, are there riveted watching every single thing that they post. Again, which is fine, to each their own. So this particular person built a Millennium Falcon. And there is a, so again, it's Maka Makes, M-A-K-A Makes, as one word. And you can find their videos up on YouTube. And I watched, they had like a, it was like a 6 minute video, and it was very, very highly accelerated time of the person building this. And really pretty fascinating how they built this and the size of it. And this isn't just like, oh, they built the shell of the Falcon. No, this was, yes, it was the shell and all the detail and, you know, the dorsal and ventral cannons and the dish and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But they also built the inside.
Really?
So, oh yeah. So there's corridors and rooms and stuff inside that are,
that's cool.
They're built for the size of a Fortnite character. So they actually, later on in the video, the character does a walkthrough of the rooms. So they're walking down through the corridors, they get into the rooms and, you know, here's a bunk room and here's a kitchen and here's all this other stuff. Really very neat, you know, really creative. Very
neat. Did they have Lando's cloak closet? Or cape closet, I should say.
You know, I don't know. They didn't show that much detail. But it might have been there.
I actually like it when people do this kind of thing in games and in other games. Somebody had done a Super Star Destroyer in Minecraft.
Yeah, yeah.
That you could. It was like that's amazing. Somebody took the time to do that and built it, and it's proportionally it looks right and everything else. Like, wow, that's impressive.
Oh yeah. Oh, it absolutely is.
So always fun when genres cross over into different things.
Yeah.
Let's see. Star Wars Kids YouTube channel has released Star Wars by the Numbers. Now, is this the first episode of Star Wars by the Numbers? Okay. Yeah, so they announced this Star Wars by the Numbers. Yeah, and they're counting things in Star Wars. This one I thought was pretty cool. Did you watch the whole video, Tim?
I did not. I got to say, to be honest, I only first saw this when I was doing the show notes, so I kind of fast-forwarded to the end of the video and cheated.
Yeah. I watched about three quarters of it before I fast-forwarded to the end myself, but it was cool. So what they did is they took every clip in every Star Wars movie of all the yeses and all the noes, and it was just fascinating to see the – and they counted the probably noes and yeses we had through the whole saga so far. Now, Tim, would you say Star Wars is more positive or more negative?
Well, knowing what the end result was here, it clearly seemed to be a little, you know, well, not a little, decidedly more negative.
Yeah, it was like almost 3-1, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. The the actual number count here I put down was, so again, across all the Star Wars movies, 196 times the word yes was said. And 647 times the word no was said.
Now, when you watched through it, though, you did have a few people going, no, 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 no. So, you know, they got like 8 of them out at once. And that was like, okay, that really should count as one, I suppose. But
what I did like is kind of when they start the video, even though they do end up going back to episode one and run things chronologically.
Yeah.
They start off with the scene from The Force Awakens in the Falcon where Rey and Finn were in there and they needed to make a repair, and Rey asked Finn for a particular tool, and, you know, he's making like he knows what he's doing. And so he reaches for a tool and she says, no, he reaches for another tool. She says, no.
Yeah, I did like that. It's a good scene. I did like there was at least three or four, and they made sure that they should have counted these as more, but there was the three or four versions of no, you know, really drawn out in the saga that only got counted as once. So that kind of got shortchanged on that one. But
what else do you think they could do with this? What other things are countable?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. I thought about that at the end when I was watching it, because they said, you know, what else do you want us to count? I don't know. Could it be how many times people eat or drink in the saga? how many times somebody bumps into somebody else or drops something. I mean, that happens quite a bit.
They could count the number of Ewoks.
Yeah. How many times people get their arms cut off?
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
How many limbs are lost of the saga?
How many lightsabers?
Well, yeah, there you go.
We see. Dude,
there's that one scene in Attack of the Clones with millions of them there. How do you count all those?
Yeah, the Battle of Geonosis. That's pretty sick. I like they'd have to go frame for frame.
Yeah. How many starfighters? How many laser bolts? Yeah, I mean, it'd be kind of cool. There's a lot of counting they could do. So this is kind of a fun little YouTube channel just for kids. But I encourage people to go out there and check it out because it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's Star Wars kids, but I will absolutely, you know, again, I don't know if I'm going to religiously go to it every time they post something, but I will definitely be checking it out periodically because I think there's just a lot of fun stuff that they could put up there. And, you know, even just this video was just a few minutes long. And
well, you know, and that's what Star Wars is all about, too, having fun, right?
I mean, exactly. Exactly.
It's a big part of this. If you're not having fun with this, why bother watching or being involved, you know? So sit back and enjoy it and have a fun ride.
Yeah, Louis, stop taking things so seriously.
I'm sorry. Let's see. Speaking of having fun with stuff, two new Lego sets that were, I guess, announced and kind of also displayed by, this is from Brother Brick. You put these up, I think, right?
Yeah. Brother Brick does reviews of sets. And so they did two reviews here. One is Death Star Escape. And this is just kind of one of their mini...
like a diorama.
Yeah, like a diorama set, exactly. And so this is from the, you know, very iconic scene of From a New Hope, where Luke and Leia are swinging across that chasm on the Death Star as they're trying to escape. And so it's a really neat little set because it, you know, sets them up with a rope going down, and they have the chasm, and there's a stormtrooper shooting at them. And I think it's kind of cool. It's a neat little set. It's only 329 pieces, $30.
Yeah. It's definitely one of the smaller sets, you know, kind of more of a kid set versus a kind of buildable collectible set, but it looks like a lot of fun. Couple of minifigs. You got stormtroopers, and you got Luke and Leia, of course.
I think the thing that I like most about it is not only because it's an iconic scene, but it's one of those things that, like, if you like to display your Legos and set them up and such, this is actually, for as fairly small and simple as it is, it's actually a cool display piece because it is that iconic.
Right. Yeah. Definitely. And they give you the whole grapple rope, too, so...
Yes, yeah.
That's always pretty sweet. And there's a way for... I guess you can attach Leia to Luke on this, so that looks pretty cool.
Lou, you just have to move on from that. We're not going to talk about it. That just gets into weird things. This is a family show.
Okay. It's like I was kissing my brother. Okay, so the other set they had here was the Trench Run. Again, from the first movie, too. So you've got a very basic-looking X-Wing. So it's not... If you're looking for the X-Wing kit to get a nice X-Wing, this is probably not the one you want to pick up. But,
no. This is very simplistic.
Yeah, very simplistic. It comes with a laser turret, comes with an X-Wing, of course, an astromech droid, and a pilot. So yeah, you're all set there for recreating your Death Star run.
Yeah, you know, this one's all right. I don't know that this is a... great set for a hardcore collector, but this is part of Lego's age 4 and up sets, so they're trying to like get something in between their regular sets and like Duplo, so right. It's for younger kids, but kids who can still, you know, maybe they need a little help with the directions and stuff, but they're smaller sets and a little more simplistic, and I think that's cool. I think it's great that they're doing that. I mean, I'm such a huge fan of Lego and everything that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, this isn't a, you know, if you're a big collector and you want an X-Wing set to build, this is not the one.
Right. And my other complaint with this one is there's no way to put the X-Wing somewhere make it look like it's in the trench run. It's the turret's separate by itself and the X-Wing's by itself, but you can't really mount them together to make, you know, a diorama to put on your display.
Yeah.
Now, if they really wanted to, you know, they could go back to that, the whole expert sets of the whole, you know, huge sets and build like, you know, a 4-foot long trench run that's, you know, a foot deep with an X-Wing and a couple of TIE fighters chasing it.
Totally.
That would be a set.
All over it.
And yeah, exactly.
You can do clear pieces that could kind of make it look like the ships are flying down the middle of the trench and stuff.
That would be a set. It would be like, you know, $1,000, but, you know, it'd be a lot of fun.
There's the Lego North American headquarters is like just down the road from you, right? You need to go.
Yeah,
visit
it's here
them
in Connecticut. I'll go talk to them.
And you need to pitch that idea. I'm totally in on that.
Okay. And can I call you if they arrest me and throw me off the premises?
I will totally bail you out, Lou. Team Bald Guy.
Thank you. All right. Awesome. Okay. What else do we have here? So now we talked, I think last week we talked about the 20th anniversary sets being released this coming year. And you've got a note in here about a Slave One being rumored to come out again. I haven't seen any news on this yet, but is that kind of a strong rumor or is this just wishful thinking?
You know, I don't know. It still the strongest rumor out there right now for the 20th anniversary sets is the, Anakin pod racer.
Mm-hmm.
This one, though, is mentioned, and I mean, there have certainly been Slave One sets out there before. Probably the most notable is the UCS, the Ultimate Collector Series one, which I have and is just an incredible build. It was so much fun, and it took like a really long time to build, and it's an awesome display piece. Totally worth it.
Isn't there a Slave One still available in stores right now? Like it's not that long ago, right? I mean, I thought that was still.
Yeah. There probably is a mainline set for Slave One. For this one, even one of the articles that I saw where it mentioned it, they're not even sure in the rumor if this is going to be Boba Fett's, you know, green and maroon version, or if this is going to be Jango's blue and tan or blue and gray version.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So there is a possibility there. I'm pretty sure that there has been a Jango version Slave One, but I don't recall it.
There is still one on the Lego website. Book. Yeah, there is still one on the Lego website now. Slave One, it is the green and maroon version. Looks like you can still order it.
Okay.
On Lego.com. So, yeah, it's still out there. But
it would be cool if they did. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be UCS level, but a good version of the Jango Fett paint scheme, I think, would be cool.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that. And particularly if, because the thought of this is that for the 20th anniversary, because the 20th anniversary is associated with episode one, it, so that's what makes them think that they are going to go, you know, back through these movies. Maybe they do an iconic set or two from each film, which would be great. So I don't know. We'll see.
Nice.
Stay tuned.
Definitely. We did have some teasers put out this last week or so. I think I saw this right around New Year's, right, where they had General Grievous, nice studio shots of his Black Series figure coming out.
Oh, gosh, Lou.
This thing looks awesome.
This is one of the most highly anticipated Black Series figures out there. And I guess the initial reveal of this was done at New York City Comic Con.
No,
which
I
never saw it happen from there, but this
article. I saw one of the panels there. I didn't remember seeing him talk about Grievous at that panel.
Hmm.
I saw the one with Steve. I can't remember his name. No, he's actually stepped down from the Star Wars Black Series stuff at Hasbro to take on, I think, some Transformer stuff he's doing now. But they showed a couple of things, but don't remember seeing Grievous there.
Yeah.
Their big thing they showed in your Comic Con was the stuff below that in this article you posted, Tim, for the Archive series.
The Archive ones, yeah.
The packaging for that and everything else. And I haven't seen them swing on the pegs yet. I heard they're out, but I've not seen them in stores yet. So there's the Boba Fett, the IG-88, and Bossk. in that new series. But yeah, this Grievous looks amazing. This will be one of the larger scale ones in the Black Series. It's not going to be one of the numbered ones that we see in the regular packaging. It'll be the bigger, thicker box, kind of like the Gamorrean Guard was recently.
Oh, okay.
And I'm pretty sure it was that I saw the packaging for this that way.
Yep.
And because he's in that $29.99 price range, so it'll be the bigger packaging.
Oh, okay.
He does come with four lightsabers, his cloak. Yep. It looks awesome. He looks like a great figure. I can't wait to get my hands on one of these.
He really does. I think just because he's so unique, I think it's going to be a great piece. I mean, it's right off of this particular site we're looking at here with comicbook.com. Says you can go pre-order them right now at Entertainment Earth. Shipping is slated for March. Of course, Lou and I tend to like to find these things in the wild. But if I pre-ordered, you want to get your grubby little hands on it right away, go for it.
I mean, if I pre-ordered, I can't complain about not getting one.
That's very true.
I still like finding him in a while, but this one I might pre-order just because I really want to get him. And I'm interested to find out if when he's out of the packaging, if the arms clip together to make two arms and then break apart for four, or how that works with this one, if it does that or not.
Boy, I don't know. It's hard to tell. I mean, the picture's really good, but it's hard to tell from the picture what it may or may not do.
Looks like there might be pieces that snap together, but I don't know. We'll have to wait and see what that really looks like
on
the figure. But the detail looks amazing on this, so I'm looking forward to getting my hands on that.
Yeah, it is really cool. I mean, it's, and quite honestly, probably if you don't get it, from, you know, when it releases in March before Celebration, you'll probably pay $60 for it at Celebration.
Yeah. So. Well, it's funny because a lot of these bigger figures that are in that $30 price point don't go as fast.
No, they don't seem to. Like the Gamorrean Guard, I've seen a bunch of them out there.
I was in Target and there's a bunch of Gamorrean Guards and a bunch of, what's the character from Solo? Moloch? Is that his name?
Modok.
It was like probably 20 boxes down there in a mix of both of those characters.
Yeah.
So they don't go as fast as the smaller ones do because they're, you know, $30 instead of $20.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that just brings us to the end of our news for this week. We have been talking in the past about bringing up a discussion topic of Mandalorians through history, and we're actually going to go ahead and do that now. We're on time and under budget this episode, so we're going to kind of talk about that a little bit. Now, Tim, this was a link that you had found on IO9, right? Talking about
going back about 2 or 3 months. So they put this out, I don't know, not too long after the news on The Mandalorian came out. And so I just thought it was kind of neat that they went through like this chronological history of the Mandalorians and their appearances within the Star Wars timeline. And they're looking at all medium in here. So for folks who might not know, the first appearance of Boba Fett was the holiday special.
Blasphemy.
And because the holiday special was out before Empire Strikes Back was out. So, you know, that was our first appearance of Boba Fett. And then we saw him in Empire. We saw him in comic books, and there have been books. And we're not just talking Boba Fett. We're talking the Mandalorians as a whole.
Right. I mean, you know, Mandalorians got their start with Boba Fett. I mean, that's the first one. And something I was reading in this article that I didn't know before was that the character Boba Fett wasn't actually a Mandalorian to begin with. He was wearing Mandalorian armor, but he was never meant to be a Mandalorian.
Right.
I mean, you know, in going back to that first appearance in the movie, I mean, how long was he on screen for? I mean, it wasn't all that long. And he was just this very mysterious character that everybody kind of fell in love with and was like, oh my gosh, who is this guy? And we want to know more about him. Yep. And we've been clamoring for more about him ever since. And there's been somewhat limited information about him as far as, you know, real canon official knowledge. A lot of stuff in the expanded universe before that got turned into legends, right? So, I mean, originally they were armored warriors, and then they were just mercenaries.
Yeah,
you know, where people didn't have a real culture behind them, but they were just mercenaries for hire. So it was that old West space cowboys type, theme to them, and that was through mainly through the comics, right?
Yeah, a lot of it came through in the comics.
It says in here, it says, at first there wasn't much to go on. There had been plans for a group of white armored super commandos, and that was that white armor that McCrory had drawn up, which is an amazing, was it 2 years ago? One of the exclusive at the conventions was a white Hallmark ornament that was the original, you know, Boba Fett armor. Looked awesome.
Yes.
And that was the original thought behind them.
Yeah.
And let's see, in the novel, there's some more in the novelization for Empire by David F. Glut. There was some more details about them being an evil race of warriors that were defeated during the Clone Wars by the Jedi. But that was, you know, since taken back because we didn't have that in the movies. Let's see what else they have here. Star Wars Comics introduced. What's the pronunciation of the name? Fen Shisa?
I believe so, yeah.
The Mandalorian Protectors, the Mandalorian Army for Hire, that was all kind of out of the Clone Wars. In the 90s when we had the Expanded Universe coming out, there was a lot of Mandalorian stuff in some of the novels, which I did not read, so I'm a little bit shaky on my knowledge of that part of it. But that got them into more of talking about them as a warlike culture, you know, almost thriving for war and really going out of the way to be, you know, a warlike culture. And I did not read a lot of the novels of that.
They got into a lot of things like on Mandalore. There were stories that spent a lot of time with that, with Boba Fett being on Mandalore and essentially being, you know, the elected, I can't remember what particular term they use for it, but basically their elected leader or chieftain, of like the particular clan of Mandos. And then I think amongst the different clans, they, would elect a Mandalorian to basically be the head of all of them. Okay. And for a period of time, that was Boba Fett. And, you know, they talked about some of the different clan issues and that kind of stuff. And it, you know, it was some interesting exploration of the character and of Mandos. And they would get into the origins of their Beskar Gom, which was their armor, mm-hmm. and how their armor was basically resistant to lightsabers and that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of different things out there. There was a Tales of the Bounty Hunters book that came out. There was a trilogy, the Bounty Hunter trilogy that came out, which focused mm-hmm. mostly on Boba Fett. And they, you know, they did bring in a lot of the other bounty hunters, particularly that we saw on Vader's ship in Empire, you know, so they talked about Bosk and such, mm-hmm. and, you know, some of those interactions and the competition amongst bounty hunters and such.
As they got into the prequel era of movies, they kind of got away from being portraying the Mandalorians as this really warlike, bloodthirsty culture into being, in this article even talks about, I'm going to use the a non-Star Wars friendly word here, but Klingon-esque type warriors where they had more honor behind them and they were, you know, definitely warlike and built for battle, but more of a honor-driven code behind them. And even in here it says kind of roughed out, smoothed out the rough edges of them to make them more, you know, politically correct, more user-friendly, I guess, if you talk about them in a family atmosphere of Star Wars that we have today.
Make them a kinder, gentler Mandalorian.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, make the deaths quick, I guess, maybe instead of drawing them out. But, you know, we've gotten into this modern interpretation of them, and we've had a little bit of interaction with them in the animated series that we've had recently, right? So they played pretty heavily in the Clone Wars. And that changed them again from being this warlike culture to a, you know, a peace-loving diplomatic society that, yeah, you know, still that warrior culture, but, you know, they don't need to portray war all the time, just strength that they have, you know, in their background. And that
Except,
does bring
of course,
up
the Death Watch.
Well, that was funny. In this article, they talk about them being more diplomatic and peace-loving, and not peace-loving, but more diplomatic and less warlike And they said the Death Watch was part of that. And I'm like, yeah, but that's not the right name for a diplomatic type, you know, peace loving culture, not peace loving, but, you know, diplomatic type, non-warrior esque group of people. But, you know, what do you think of, I mean, out of all the iterations we've had of Mandalorians over the years, do you think it's a fluid change? Do you think this is where we should be? Do you wish we could go back to the old times?
I'm okay with there being a variety of different interpretations of it, because one thing that has kind of seemed to be very well established, and they reflected on that in the Clone Wars, and they even reflected on that in Rebels with Sabine, is that there are clans of Mandalorians, and a lot of the clans have their different philosophies of the place of Mandalorians in the universe, how Mandalore should be governed. You know, you have Mandalorians that kind of stick to Mandalore. You have other Mandalorians that either in groups or on their own are going out through the galaxy doing different things.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are known to be excellent bounty hunters. Some of them are mercenaries for hire. You just have them doing different things. So I think that it offers a lot of opportunity for all of that to be true. Just because you have this significant group of people out in the galaxy doing different things.
I was going to say the same thing, because they have these clans, that each clan has their own agenda, if you will. You know, we all know the history is written by the victors. So each clan is going to have their own version of history.
Yeah.
And what we were and what we were doing and why we are who we are. So you can make this almost into anything you want based on which clan you're portraying going forward.
Right.
So I like that a lot.
Exactly. And obviously, you know, Boba Fett has gotten quite a cult following, has been the fuel behind the popularity of the Mandalorians, to the extent that maybe some of our newer listeners might be thinking, well, wait a minute, you mentioned that the holiday special was the first appearance of Boba Fett, and that was after A New Hope, but I saw Boba Fett in A New Hope. Boba Fett was put into A New Hope in the special edition. So the original version of A New Hope did not have Boba Fett, that Boba Fett cameo in it.
When you're talking to him, I was going, what's he talking about? Oh, wait, he was. Oh, that's right. The special edition version. I forgot about
that. Yes. Yep. The scene at the landing pad,
Spaceport,
where the Falcon was.
Yep. Yeah. Jockeyport, so, 94.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of really cool things there. Obviously, we got this great info on Jango Fett and the prequels, and then that kind of got us warmed up into Boba as we saw him as a kid, and we kind of got to see him as an adolescent through parts of the Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And we may hopefully get to see more of him in this kind of this continuation of Clone Wars that's going to be coming up. One of the episodes that didn't get aired had a fight between Boba Fett and Cad Bane.
Right.
In it. And that was actually shown by that was shown at the last Star Wars celebration. They showed some clips from that episode, which was really neat. So hopefully that means we're going to get to see a little bit more of kind of a younger, not quite adult Boba, but, you know, as he's kind of getting into the bounty hunter game.
Mm-hmm. So now, Tim, you know, we're talking about this mainly because we have a new series coming up that will be, you know, all about Mandalorians, or at least we presume it will, because the name of the series is The Mandalorian. Where are we going to be with this? Is this going to be focused on just this guy, do you think, or are we going to get more of an overall culture and background on Mandalore in general and where they sit in this time frame? I'm kind of tossing up in my mind as to what we're going to get, if we're going to get, you know, the former or the latter. I think we're going to get more of just about this one guy and not about Mandalore you know, the planet and the culture.
Yeah.
Sadly.
I agree. Especially if, you know, this Mandalorian, the focal character is not on Mandalore. You know, if they give us anything, they'll probably kind of just feed us little bits here and there about the culture and the planet and all that kind of stuff. But it seems to me almost that this is either a wayward Mandalorian or a Mandalorian doing as, again, a lot of other Mandos have done, which is I'm going to go out on my own and, you know, make a living in the galaxy, as Jango put it.
Right. And that makes sense to me, I guess. I mean, as much as I'd like to see more about the culture of the Mandalorians in general, I'm sure we'll get a little bit of that thrown in for some spice and some seasoning here. But I think overall, he is the meat of this sandwich. And we're going to get just about this one guy and how he is in the world. I'm going to say industry, how he is in the world or in the galaxy as far as what he's doing and how he's making his living.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we have to wait until the fall to get that, because we're not going to get that until the new Disney Plus streaming service comes online, which is, what, fourth quarter of this year, which could be as late as December 31st.
It could be. We don't have an official date yet, but I will certainly be signing up as soon as they
yeah.
You think we'll get anything about, they announce it.
You think we'll get anything about that at Celebration? About the Disney streaming service in general?
I would hope so, but there is also a D23 this year.
Oh, yeah, that's usually where they do the Disney stuff.
And they may reserve it for that.
Oh, well.
Yeah, let's see. D23 is in August. August seems awfully late for them.
It does, yeah.
Announce it if they're going to do a fourth quarter thing. So,
yeah.
Maybe.
Well, we'll see. I mean, like, they can't give me any information too soon as far as I'm concerned when it comes to what that service will be about, how you're going to get it, what you're going to pay for it, and all that good stuff. So,
yeah.
So that was our quick wrap-up of Mandalorians in general. We'd love to hear anybody else's thoughts about what they feel about the changes in Mandalorians over time, how they have evolved, where you'd like them to be, what you do or don't like about the current direction of where the story writing is going with Mandalorians in general. You know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Absolutely.
So Tim, at this point, I think we are done with the episode. Unless you got anything last minute you want to throw in here, we're ready to close the blast doors.
That's all I've got.
Okay.
It's, this next week, it is cold here in Hawk.
Yeah,
so well, if you are in the Northeast, be sure to bundle up.
They're talking about warming up to 40 degrees by Thursday, I think, here. So
we're going to get bombed with snow next weekend.
We haven't gotten any snow at all this year. We got one little snowstorm in October before the base is ready for it. Now we're just, yep, we're ready and nothing's happening. So yeah, we'll see. If you have any questions for us or any comments for the show itself, you can get a hold of us by sending us an email. Echobase@randomchatter.com is the best way to get a hold of both of us here. You can find us online as well. We are on Twitter @ForceChatter. We're also on Twitter @RandomChatter. You can find me on Twitter @LewSkywalker. That's Skywalker without the E. And Tim, where can they find you on Twitter?
@QuiGonTim. That's Tim with two M's.
And of course, you can find all of our shows over at RandomChatter.com.
And certainly be sure to listen to our other shows. Check out what other folks are doing. We have The Outer Rim, which is our other Star Wars show on the network. But we also have a variety of other shows. We have DC Talk. We have Guardians of the MCU. We have Random Chatter, of course, and a lot of other things out there covering a lot of different interests. So we appreciate you sampling those. And whatever you like, certainly be sure to spread the word. Tell your friends, family members, coworkers, even total strangers about us. That helps to grow our listenership and increases interaction with a lot of folks. So whether you interact with us by sending us an email or hitting us with a tweet or hanging out with us over on Discord, we certainly love it and appreciate it. You can also leave us some reviews wherever you get the podcasts, places like iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. Be sure to click on all the stars, write some good stuff about us. And speaking of Discord, if you head over to randomchatter.com/Discord, that will get you into our Discord community for free. That is our public lobby and our show channels. If you are interested in fuller access to our Discord community, we kind of just ask that you become a contributor to the network by way of Patreon. So head over to randomchatter.com/Patreon, and just $1 a month will get you full access to our Discord community. And subscriptions also go up from there. So you can go to $5 a month, $10 a month. And for everything we give you, everything you give us, we give some things to you and throw some things back at you with bonus content. And we have a special show that we're doing now and all that good stuff. So we definitely appreciate all of your support.
And of course, the music you hear on the podcast is The Imperial March by Cell Dweller. That does bring us to the end of the show. We're going to close the blast doors and we'll see you guys in about a week. It's a trap!